the roots as he dragged her across the rough ground. Her weight was no problem for him to handle. With the urgency with which he pulled her along, and with the way he was holding her by her hair, twisting her neck around, she could only get in a half step here and there. Most of the time, she was off balance, as she was dragged like a rag doll. Angela didn't say anything. She knew Owen had done all the listening he intended to do. When they reached the pickup, instead of pulling her into the cab as she had expected, the cab where her gun was, he went around to the back of the truck. He dropped the tailgate with his free hand, hopped up, and with one swift yank, hauled her up by her hair. Owen threw her down in the bed of the truck. He was done with proving to her that he was no ordinary guy. He had switched into psycho mode and was now intent only on what he wanted. He would now dictate what was going to happen. She knew that she shouldn't expect anything less of him. She had told him, after all, that she liked guys who took what they wanted. Angela was acutely aware of how very alone they were, and that no one would hear her screams any more than they had heard Carrie's. In a flash, he was on top of her, pawing at her.
"I like your tits,"
he said, in a breathless pant laced with lust.
"I don't like those big, fake, plastic tits most whores have these days. I like real tits, like yours."
"Kiss me," she whispered urgently into his ear. He pushed a knee up between her legs, forcing them open as he pressed his mouth over hers. His breath stank of alcohol. Angela pressed her mouth back at him, encouraging him. He responded by pushing his tongue into her mouth. She didn't resist. He unbuckled his belt and unzipped his pants, letting his uncomfortable erection spring out before going for the zipper of her shorts. As his tongue probed deep into her mouth, and his hand was busy fumbling with opening her shorts, she reached down to the top of her right boot, her fingers searching blindly. Once she found what she was looking for and had a firm grip on the handle, she abruptly clamped her teeth down on his tongue as hard as she possibly could and pulled her head back. Owen cried out in surprise, anger, and pain. His immediate instinct was self-preservation, so he leaned forward, going with her to keep his tongue from being torn open by her teeth, should he jerk back. At the same time as she clamped down on his tongue with her teeth, Angela yanked the knife from its sheath in her boot. She rammed her left forearm against his throat, abruptly pushing him back as she kept her teeth tightly clenched on his tongue, leaving less than an inch between their lips. In that instant of an opening, she swept the knife up between their faces and severed his tongue. Owen fell back from the sudden release of tension, gasping in shock and confusion. Being as drunk as he was, and the blade as sharp as it was, he didn't feel it immediately. She could see by his expression that his intoxicated brain was scrambling to process what had just happened. Angela spit out his bloody, detached tongue. As the pain began to register, Owen screamed, but it came out as more of a gurgling cry than a scream. One hand came up to cover his mouth as he tried to make sense of what had just happened. Blood seeped out between his fat fingers to run down his chin. As he grasped what she'd done, anger flashed to the forefront of his mind. He grabbed her by the throat with his free hand. Angela stabbed the blade into his arm between the humerus and his bulging biceps, then pulled forcefully, severing the muscle in half. By the volume of blood spurting out, she knew she'd cut the brachial artery. The warm, wet blood flooded across her chest and bare midriff. Despite the severity of the injury, his big hand managed to clamp her throat in a death grip. Angela gritted her teeth against the pressure of him trying to crush her windpipe and slashed the straining tendons on the inside of his wrist. As the muscles drew back up into his forearm, his fingers went slack. His arm finally flopped down onto the bed of the truck. When he made the mistake of taking his other hand from his bloody mouth and again reaching for her throat, she slashed the inside of that wrist, then cut the bundle of tendons at the inside of his elbow before he had time to flinch back. Just that quick, both his arms were largely put out of commission. Angela leaned in. "Aren't you glad I didn't wait any longer?" His eyes wide, he stared at her, confused by the question. He didn't know what she meant. She grabbed his shriveled penis hanging from his open pants. Aren't you glad that was your tongue in my mouth and not your dick? She showed him a grim smile. See? Things could always be worse. And believe me, they are going to get worse. Finally, realizing the full magnitude of the danger he was in, Owen raged and managed to prop himself up on one elbow as he banged his heels on the truck bed, trying to gain traction to scramble to his feet so he could at least stomp her to death. Before he could get his drunken balance, Angela turned the knife in her hand, holding it like an ice pick, reached around, and drove the blade into his left kidney from behind. Owen stiffened from the shock of pain. It locked his breath in his lungs. It stiffened his legs out straight. Eyes wide, he couldn't even scream. Everything had happened so blindingly fast that he was not only bewildered, but now in the grip of immobilizing pain. Just when you thought things were going so good, here they are suddenly going oh so wrong. Right, Owen? Angela yanked the knife out and held the double-edged blade up before his eyes. She didn't ever want to have to worry in an emergency if she had the knife turned the right way. With a double-edged blade, that was never a problem. There was always a cutting edge ready to serve her wishes. The secret to a good flesh knife is not using it for anything else, she explained to him. I never so much as open an envelope with my flesh knives. I save them for men like you. That way they effortlessly slice through flesh. I think you can tell that I take exceptionally good care of my blades. Right, Owen? As she was talking, at the same time she was gripping the handle of the knife, she reached around him. Using two fingers on his lower spine, she felt for the gap below the L3 vertebra. It was somewhat difficult with the way his legs were beginning to flail. What you're thinking right now is, this is it. It's either me or her. Right, Owen? She leaned closer and whispered into his ear. Isn't that what you're thinking, Owen? Well, I've got to tell you, ever since you came into the bar, I've known all along that one way or another, it was going to be you. Once she found the area of the disc between the L3 and L4 vertebrae, she swept her left arm around his thick neck and pulled his head toward her as she pushed a knee into his gut. Bending him forward, arched his back, opening the space between the vertebrae. She plunged the knife between them. With all the fibrous sinew around that area of the spine, it took committed force, but such a sharp, double-edged blade punched right through. She levered the knife handle from side to side. With each sweep, the blade scraped against the bone of vertebrae as it sliced apart the disc and severed his spinal cord. Owen's legs flopped down, at last, motionless. Each huffing breath, as he gasped in pain and shock, expelled droplets of blood all over her. She could see in his eyes that he was stunned by how fast it had all happened. "Do you know what my name means, Owen?" He looked at her, dumbfounded, unable to answer. "Do you?" she screamed. "Do you know what it means?" Terrified, he shook his head, never taking his gaze from her. Owen was not at all used to being on the wrong end of terror. She knew he was trying to assess the damage, trying to figure out if he could still make it out of this alive. "I told you that my name means angel in Italian, remember?" He nodded, panic-stricken at what she might do next. "Good," she arched an eyebrow at him. "But do you know what angel means?" Eyes wide, he quivered as he shook his head, unable to give any answer without his tongue, except a groaning moan she couldn't understand. Angela abruptly pushed the knife in just below his ribcage until it found his liver. Owen gasped, his eyes watering and going even wider as the pain of it reached his brain. He let out a high-pitched falsetto squeal. "Angela, angel, means messenger from God," she patiently explained to him. "So you see, Owen, you can't really blame me for this now, can you? After all, I'm just the messenger, right?" As he struggled, twisting his torso, he only succeeded in slicing up his own liver on the double-edged blade, increasing his level of pain. Blood ran over her fist holding the knife and down her arm. She could feel it dripping off her elbow. "You asked me before if the tattoo across my throat was some kind of joke. Remember? I told you that maybe one day you could answer that question yourself. I think that you ought to understand the meaning now. Right, Owen? The meaning of my tattoo? The meaning of Dark Angel? So you see, maybe I really am a messenger from God. An angel. But now you know that some angels are dark angels. Get it now, Owen?"
"He stopped."
Tears streamed from his eyes.
"Pidge stopped."
Without his tongue, that was the best he could do to form the words he so desperately wanted to get out. "Please stop?" She cocked her head as she looked at him from under her brow. "Is that what you're saying, Owen? Please stop? You are asking a dark angel for mercy, then?" He nodded, relieved that she had understood the words. Angela glared at him a moment before speaking in a soft voice. "That was what Carrie said when you were using your knife on her, isn't it, Owen? When you were raping her? Isn't that what she said to you? Please stop." He cried out in agony at understanding. He may have thought it was revenge for Carrie. Angela considered it more than that. A great deal more. Angela considered it justice. Not justice in some abstract legal sense, but human justice. Clear, cold, unflinching justice. There is no leeway for mercy in this, Owen. None. She slipped the blade in between two ribs into his left lung. When she withdrew the knife, air hissed out, bubbling blood from the wound as his lung collapsed. "You're an aberration, Owen, a fucking monster living among normal people. You shouldn't be allowed to live so you can hurt innocent people like Carrie or the other three women you murdered. It was their terrible misfortune to have crossed paths with you. Unfortunately for you, I'm an anomaly too, a freak of nature. Maybe I really am a messenger from God sent to eliminate fucking aberrations like you. What do you think, Owen? I can't seem to have a normal life, a happy life, like other people. Maybe I'm not meant to. Maybe I'm only meant to kill lunatics like you before they can hurt anyone else. What do you think? I mean, I do seem to have a knack for attracting psychos. Seems like I'm a lunatic magnet." She grinned at him. "Maybe that's my reason to exist. Then again, maybe I'm just a freak of nature. Know what I mean, Owen? After all, I do so fucking enjoy the hell out of this. I live for it. Kind of like you, Owen. I think only a guy like you could truly understand the pleasure I get from inflicting this kind of suffering and terror, from the blood, from the act of killing another human being." Owen gasped for air. He had lost a lot of blood. Those gasps hissed and wheezed through the knife wound in his collapsed lung. By the icy dread in his eyes, she could tell that Owen understood he had run across that rare someone just as twisted as him. He had encountered the flip side of his own coin. Angela smiled as she pushed the blade into his gut, slicing through muscle and intestines. Owen stiffened, holding his breath, immobilized by the agony. Tears streamed down his cheeks. His warm, slippery blood was still running all over the front of her. It felt good. It felt glorious. It made her feel alive. Angela was in her element. She had this monster right where she wanted him, and she was tripping on it the way her mother tripped on drugs. She didn't want it to ever end. Her mother often told her, Angela thought as a way of somehow justifying what she did, that when you do a line, you live forever. That's what Angela was feeling, like she was living forever in that moment. Every synapse in her brain was firing to pull it all in so she could savor it, remember it, She wanted the feeling to last forever, just like her mother when she was rolling. Angela slammed the full length of the double-edged blade into another spot. It went in effortlessly, deliciously. Her head tipped back as her eyes rolled up in ecstasy at the feeling. She could sense the tip of the blade finding a vital, tender spot inside him. The pleasure of it ran a shiver up her spine. Her head came back down. "I have some bad news for you, Owen," she murmured as she pushed the blade in again, just for the exquisite pleasure of feeling it slide through his flesh, muscle, and viscera. "I'm afraid you're not going to be able to be an organ donor. You're not going to have anything left worth donating." Owen wept in utter agony. For the first time in his life, he was experiencing the helpless suffering he visited on others. Using a knife to kill someone was hard, messy, tiring work. It was also dangerous. A great many people cut themselves badly when using a knife, either to defend themselves or to attack someone. A lot of force was required and blood was slippery. More often than not, their hand would slip down off the handle, cutting their palm and fingers on the blade. Because they were using such force, such injuries were usually quite serious. Angela knew better. Her knife had a crossguard to prevent her hand from slipping up onto the blade. The crossguard wasn't large, but it was big enough to provide a stable place to brace her right knuckle and thumb for leverage. She was always conscious of being careful not to accidentally cut herself whenever she did knife work, and the crossguard helped protect her hands. Angela knew what she was doing, and did it well. She'd never cut herself. Owen groaned incoherently. Tears streamed from his eyes as he trembled. "Carrie cried just like you're crying now, didn't she, Owen? She didn't want to suffer, to be hurt, to die. Just like you don't want those things to happen to you. Right, Owen? The only fucking difference is that she didn't deserve it." Angela gritted her teeth as she twisted the blade inside him. "You do." He let out another wet cry. "Right now, Owen, all you know is pain." Angela peered into his eyes. "But through pain comes knowledge, realization, understanding. Now, in your pain, maybe you can see yourself for what an evil monster you truly are." Her brow drew down. "An evil fucking monster who shouldn't be allowed to live among decent people. Right, Owen? Are you beginning to understand?" Owen nodded as he wept. She wasn't sure he understood any of it. Angela didn't really care. She did. 7. Even though it seemed like it had gone on forever, it had actually all happened very quickly. But it was getting late. Angela realized that she needed to get on with it. Still, she didn't want it to end. She drove the knife into his other kidney because she knew how much it would hurt. The excruciating pain made it through the fog of blood loss to widen his eyes so much it almost looked as if his eyeballs might pop right out of his head. He trembled uncontrollably, just like Carrie and the other women he murdered had trembled. Owen was no longer capable of posing a threat to Angela or anyone else. No other woman would die to satisfy his twisted desires. No other family would grieve and go through hell because of Owen. There would always be others like him. There had always been murderers, and there always would be. But this was at least the end of Owen bringing pain, terror, and agonizing sorrow into the world. Angela finally got up and pulled his shredded, blood-soaked shirt off him. He was no longer able to offer any resistance. She went to the toolbox at the head of the truck bed and lifted the diamond plate lid to retrieve a stout length of nylon rope. She'd found it by the side of the road and knew that one day it would come in handy. Today was that day. Going to one knee, she rolled Owen over onto his stomach. He flopped down into the blood, filling the channels of the truck bed like a half-dead carp. Blood dripped off the frayed legs of her shorts and ran down her legs. It dripped from the tips of her hair. Kind of the way you like to do things to women, right, Owen? Rough and brutal? Knifing them as you fuck them so they'll scream and thrash? That's what you like, isn't it? Isn't it? Although he seemed to show some response, she couldn't be sure if he was capable of hearing her anymore, or if it was simply the involuntary reaction of the nervous system. She hoped that somewhere in the dim recesses of his fading consciousness he could still grasp what she was saying. She hoped that her words would escort him into death. She hoped that her words would be with him for an eternity in hell. Despite how fast it had all happened, with the way he was losing blood from the severed artery in his arm, to say nothing of the other knife wounds bleeding both externally and internally, she didn't think he was going to be conscious much longer. His skin was cold and pallid, so she was sure he was already going into shock. Angela didn't think there was a trauma center on Earth that could save his sorry ass now. "Owen, you dumb fuck! You're getting blood all over my truck!" She kicked him in the ribs where she'd stabbed him. "But go ahead and bleed all you want. I like it." As she stood over him, a boot to either side of his head, she used a finger and a thumb to wiggle a black marker pen from her back pocket. She squatted down, sitting on his head to keep him still. He coughed up blood as he tried to breathe with his one functioning lung. Leaning over, Angela started at the bottom of his rib cage and wrote, "I killed Carrie Stratton." The words were intentionally upside down from the way they would be if he were standing. "I left her body 320 yards up the turnoff before the bridge." The last words ended up across the backs of his shoulders. Angela leaned back to inspect her work. It looked to her like it would be perfectly legible from a distance. Since it was a permanent marker, the blood running out of him wouldn't wash away the words. Neither would the rain if it started in again. She leaned in once more and rummaged around in his back right pocket. She knew from the visions that was where he kept the knife he used on the women he murdered. Once she fished it out, she saw that it was a rather cheap Chinese knockoff of a large buck-folding hunting knife. She opened the blade and felt the edge. Owen didn't take good care of his knife. The blade was dull and chipped. She used the bent point of the blade to cut deeply into his flesh, tracing over the letters of "I killed Carrie Stratton." He moaned with each dragging stroke she cut. Those words were the important part. She left the black marker lettering for the rest of the words. She wanted to make sure Carrie's remains were found. It wouldn't bring any joy to her family, but at least they would be able to bury her properly. It would bring closure. Angela climbed off Owen, leaned down, and put her mouth close to his ear. "Well, Owen, all done. Sorry I had to get to the end so quickly. Ordinarily I would have taken you home to let the fun go on and on for a few days until I turned your brain to mush. But since we're out in the middle of nowhere in the dead of night, I'm going to have to wrap it up. See, like I told you, things could always be worse. You're getting off easy. Easier than Carrie did. Easier than the other women you killed. I just need to put a period to it." Angela picked up his shirt and wiped the handle of his knife to get rid of her fingerprints, just in case. Holding his knife with his shirt to avoid adding back any prints, she put the blade on the period after "I killed Carrie Stratton." She leaned over, putting her weight on the handle to work the dull blade down between his ribs and finally into his heart. Angela had been tempted to let him bleed out, to suffer in a nightmare dream state between life and death until the end came. She knew it wouldn't be long until he crossed over into death. Truth be told, she was a bit surprised that he was still alive. But she didn't want the remote risk of him using his dying breath to utter her name to someone. As the knife irreparably damaged his heart, one last gurgled breath rattled out of his remaining good lung. Angela left his knife, the one he used to murder Carrie, sticking in his back as she stuffed most of the bloody shirt in his back pocket. She tied the rope securely around one of Owen's ankles before hopping down out of the truck. She swiped her hair back off her face, then jerked on the rope, checking the knot. She was drenched in blood. It dripped from her hair, looking in real life like the way she had dyed it that morning. She didn't want to get in the cab of her pickup and get blood smeared all over the inside, so after retrieving her knife off the floor of the truck, she walked back up the path to a spot where the stream was close. After the violence of unleashing her rage on Owen, it was a wonderful, peaceful walk in the faintly moonlit woods. Owen was dead. The world was rid of a killer. Angela sat on a rounded rock in the small stream and cleaned her knife in the running water before slipping it back into the sheath in her boot. She splashed water over the laces, rinsing blood out of the crevices in the leather. The suede boots would never be the same after getting drenched this way, but she didn't care. Angela lay down on her back in the stream, letting the cold water wash over her hot flesh. Despite how cold the water was, she lay in the running stream for a time, staring up at the glow of the moon through the fog. It was a wonder, the way she couldn't see very far ahead when driving through the fog, but when she looked straight up through the blanketing layer of it, she could see all the way to the moon. She rolled over several times to wash off the blood as best she could. It was dripping from the tips of her hair, so she washed her hair in the running water and scrubbed blood from her face. It took a while in the cold water, but she did a pretty good job of getting the blood off her. Most of it even washed out of her shorts and top. She regretted that. Having his hot blood all over her had been an intoxicating rush. Being covered in the blood of a monster like Owen was the only time Angela truly felt alive. Once she was washed as clean as she was going to get in a stream, she returned to her truck and backed out of the turnoff. She spun the steering wheel as she reached the road and backed onto the bridge, parking at an angle in the middle, with the tailgate protruding over one of the steel girders. When she went around to the back of the truck, Owen was, of course, no more than a fresh corpse. Even though it was over, she was still filled with rage. She would need that anger for the final effort. She tied the rope to the steel guardrail and then hopped up in the bed of the truck. Thick blood sloshed out the end of the bed when her movement rocked the truck. She stood over the slain monster, still seeing visions of the things he had done to Carrie and the other women, and reveled in his agonizing death. She only wished she could have made his end last a lot longer. Angela let the thoughts of him enjoying, torturing, and killing innocent women fill her with rage. That rage powered her muscles to help with the last bit of it. Owen was a big man, making him a lot of dead weight. Freshly dead people were heavy and extremely difficult to handle. She wasn't anywhere near strong enough to lift their weight. Even dragging them for more than a very short distance was almost impossible. She had learned that she needed to kill people where she meant to leave their body, because she wasn't going to be able to move them very far once they were dead. All the slippery blood in the bed of the truck made it somewhat easier to slide Owen to the end of the bed. She tugged until she was able to spin him around so that his head stuck off the tailgate. She put her boot against his ass and with one mighty final push slid him off the tailgate. Owen nosedived out over the bridge. Angela stood on the tailgate, holding a steel girder for support, as she leaned out and watched him tumble through the murky, moonlit darkness. The rope snapped taut, but held. Owen flopped and bungeed up and down a bit on the end of that rope, arms flailing outward like a brawny ballerina's as he spun and twisted, until he finally settled down to dangle by one ankle at the end of the rope. His body swung back and forth slightly over the highway below. The rope wasn't long enough that a car could hit him, but there would be no missing him hanging there. One leg flopped awkwardly out to the side, his genitals dangling through his open zipper, his arms dangling out and down, his knife stuck in his back. A human sign confessing his guilt and telling people where he had dumped Carrie's body. Angela had gotten blood all over her hands, pushing Owen around, and on her boots from walking around in his blood, so she went to a puddle at the side of the road and stood in it to wash her boots clean as she squatted down and cleaned the blood off her hands. She shook her hands dry as best she could before getting up into the cab of her truck. Her shorts and top were soaking wet, but at least it was only water and not Owen's blood she was getting all over the upholstery. When she turned the key, the powerful engine roared to life. She felt powerful, too. 8. By the time Angela reached the turnoff onto the long, winding drive up to her cabin back in the mountains, the truck's heater had gotten her warm and mostly dry. There was a gap for her to drive in the substantial barbed wire fence along the road. The barbed wire fence, with no trespassing signs posted at regular intervals, was intended to keep people out rather than keep anything in. A determined person could, of course, use a wire cutter to cut through the fence. The height of the fence was meant to be a statement that the signs meant business. Angela put the truck in park at the opening through the fence, unlocked the padlock, and dropped the cable with a sign that had a white skull and crossbones against a black background above the words, "No Trespassing." It was a sign not easily missed, and its serious appearance was not frivolous. Once she drove in, she parked again and pulled the cable back across the opening, locking it with the padlock. Angela didn't like visitors any more than her grandparents had. A half mile up the winding one-lane drive past a meadow and then back into thick forest, the brick cabin came into view. It was tucked into pines growing in the craggy rock that began ascending behind and to each side. The small, hunkered-down building looked sinister in the pale, foggy moonlight. She liked it looking sinister. Most locals were afraid of the place. Trespassers had, in the past, tended to have accidents. Built by her grandparents, Vito and Gabriella Constantine, the place wasn't the usual backcountry cabin. Most of those were little more than wooden or log hunting shacks deep in the woods. But hunting was not allowed in the preserve around the property, and her grandparents had long ago posted no hunting signs. Her grandparents called the place their cabin, even though it was built of brick, because that was the local naming convention for places people had back in the woods. The solidly built little house had really been their retreat, their second home. Vito Constantine had been a bricklayer and a union steward. He'd helped build many of the old sprawling manufacturing plants in Milford Falls that were now mostly graffiti-covered shells with broken windows. After saving for most of his life, he'd bought the commercially useless 60-odd acre leftover parcel of land and put his cabin in the recess between mountains. The vast surrounding preserve had been established by one of the wealthy factory owners back when he had more money than he knew what to do with, and rocky land could be had for next to nothing. He'd had grand ideas about eventually donating it to the Park Service. But after the factories closed, he left the area and lost interest in the project. The preserve remained intact, managed by a small trust he'd established that nowadays rarely kept tabs on it. The game wardens and sheriff's officers mostly saw to keeping people from hunting or timber harvesting on the preserve. For the most part, since it couldn't be used for hunting, the extensive tract of land was ignored and forgotten. For some reason, long forgotten, her grandparents' 60 acres hadn't been included in the preserve, and, it being so isolated, they had been able to buy it for a price they could afford. Once her grandfather had the land, he did what he knew best. He built the cabin, as he and Angela's grandmother called it, out of brick. While he wasn't a big man, laying brick and block his whole working life left him sinewy and strong. Vito Constantine was a gentle man, but he possessed an air of quiet authority. People instinctively knew not to cross him. Since the road going past didn't go directly to anywhere important, People rarely came around their place. Once, a couple of young men who didn't respect the no trespassing signs ended up with broken bones and memory loss. All they could seem to remember when questioned by the police was having fallen off a ladder. Over the years, her grandfather's Wolverine-like reputation had cast a spell of sorts over the property, so much so that even after his death, people continued to avoid the Constantine place. It also helped that there was no hunting in the preserve, so people rarely had any reason to be in the area. Cars parked along the road running past the property and the preserve were easily spotted by the sheriff and wardens. The property was a kind of outlier from Milford Falls, for all practical purposes a dead end, with few reasons for people to be out there. That was one of the reasons her grandparents liked it. That's the way Angela liked it. Angela parked at the side, turned off the truck, and sat for a few minutes, eyes closed, enjoying the quiet, forested seclusion of her cabin. After a time, she got out and uncoiled the garden hose from up against the house, then dropped the tailgate and hopped up into the bed of the truck. She hosed out the lacings of her boots before turning her attention to blasting the nooks and crannies of the truck bed to clean out all the blood. She kept hosing water around until the water that ran out ran clear, no longer showing any trace of blood. Once finished, she unlocked the heavy oak door to the cabin and went inside. The place wasn't very big. It had a living room with a wood stove across the front with a kitchen behind to the left. To the right, behind the living room, was bedroom and bath. It wasn't a big house, but it was all her grandparents had needed, all Angela needed. She liked the small, cozy nature of the place, as well as the seclusion. Between the bathroom and the living room, there was a door that led down to the basement. Far and away, the most interesting room in the house, as far as Angela was concerned. At the back, between the kitchen and bedroom, was a small mudroom at a back door. Angela opened an upper cabinet in the small mudroom and retrieved a nearly full gallon jug of bleach. Back at the truck, she poured the bleach all over the bed, sloshing it into the corners and seams until she had used it all. She tossed out the empty jug, picked up the hose, and once again thoroughly washed out the truck bed. Angela knew enough about forensics to be aware that there was plenty she didn't know and would never know. She held no illusions that she was smarter than the police, or that she could cover up a killing and never be found out. She knew that there were experts who could recover evidence in ways she couldn't begin to imagine. That was the risk she had to run. Her only safety was in being as careful as possible, and above all, maintaining a low profile. She did her best to fly under the radar by avoiding connections to trouble and avoiding all the various kinds of authorities. Owens was the only body she'd ever left to be found. She hoped that once the police found Carrie's body, they would be focused on the women Owen had killed, rather than on who killed Owen. Angela knew that if there was ever reason to take a close look at her in connection with deaths, experts could always find something incriminating. So she did her best not to ever leave anything for them to find. She also did her best not to give them a reason to look in her direction in the first place. She didn't want to be a needle in the haystack. She wanted to remain a needle in the boundless forest. It helped that she didn't have friends and didn't socialize. People generally didn't know much about her, other than what she let them see on the surface. Once the bed of the truck was cleaned to the best of her ability, she got a spray bottle of cleaner and a rag and went about cleaning the inside of the truck, wiping away any fingerprints Owen might have left. She cleaned the door wherever he might have touched it when getting in or out of the truck, as well as the tailgate and sides of the bed he could have touched. Angela knew that the police would eventually come around with a photo of Owen, asking if he had come into the bar. She would tell them the truth, that he had. They would want to know what he'd had to say. She would tell them the truth, that he'd hit on her and wanted her to come back to his motel. She said no, and he left after last round was called. Barry would corroborate everything she would tell the police. Owen had been outside alone with her truck for quite a while, so she didn't know where he might have put his hands. If the police did happen to find his fingerprints somewhere on the outside of the truck, she could always say that for all she knew it was because he had been looking to break into it. How would she know? She had been inside working and then cleaning up after the bar had closed. As long as they didn't find any fingerprints inside the truck, they had no reason to investigate Angela any further. That was the key to her survival. Make sure the authorities had no reason to ever look at her any further. She worked on the truck until she was confident every surface inside was free of Owen's fingerprints. She let out a sigh as she flicked her rag back to lay it over her shoulder. It had been a long day. She was relieved to be home at her cabin in the woods, away from people. When she had been a young girl, Angela had stayed with her grandparents often, either at their house in town or more often at their cabin in the woods. The house in town was on a small lot close to other homes that all looked alike. Angela loved being with her grandparents anywhere, but she much preferred the cabin, where there were no other people around and seemingly endless woods to explore. When she had been younger, Angela's mother, Sally, didn't much care that her parents took care of Angela so often. In reality, a lot of the time Sally was so high she didn't even notice that Angela was gone. Her mother rarely kept track of her. Her grandparents, on the other hand, were protective of Angela and always knew where she was, or at least where she was supposed to be. They were more like parents to her than her mother ever was. Angela's mother didn't care about much of anything, except getting high. She wasn't picky about what kind of cigarettes she smoked, what brand of beer she was drinking, what kind of booze, or who she slept with. She was much the same with drugs. She had used cocaine since long before Angela was born, and when meth became readily available and cheap, she often turned to that. While she would snort, smoke, or shoot just about anything, meth became her drug of choice. But she would happily use cocaine if it was available. Both would leave her wired for days. After being high for 3 or 4 days, she smoked weed to bring herself down so she could sleep. She occasionally shot up heroin to bring herself down enough to sleep, but then she could get into a cycle of using heroin. The police had been to their trailer many times. When they showed up, they frequently ended up arresting Sally and some of the other people in the house. Sally rarely spent more than a night in jail. Vito always refused to bail her out, but he would come pick up Angela. By hook or by crook, Sally always got out. Either the charges were dropped or she was given probation. She got into heroin at different times, and several times had gone to the emergency room with an overdose. Some of those times, it had been Angela who had to call 911. Each time, the hospital brought her back to life. Several times, to stay out of jail, she had gone to rehab. When she got out and was off heroin, she was almost immediately drawn back to meth. Angela didn't want her mother to die, but she envisioned that if she did, Angela would then be able to live with her grandparents and not have to be near Sally's friends. The living room of their trailer was often filled not only with a boyfriend, but with strangers, mostly men, often snorting drugs from the mirror on the coffee table, or smoking crack, or shooting up. Sally preferred to live her life in a stupefied state. That often led to trouble for Angela. The people hanging around the house would frequently offer Angela drugs, encouraging her to try this or that, and then laugh when Angela only glared as she went past them to the refuge of her bedroom. Sally didn't work. She scraped by on welfare checks, child assistance, food stamps, and a variety of other assistance programs. She got all the needles she needed from clean needle programs. People came around the trailer park handing them out like candy on Halloween. If she had no money to buy drugs, her male friends, who always seemed to be hanging around their trailer, her sketchy boyfriends or a dealer, was always willing to provide drugs in exchange for sex. More than once, Angela peeked out her bedroom door to see several naked men strutting out of her mother's bedroom. Angela knew that one of those slime balls, or any one of the random men just like them, had fathered her. Who, exactly, no one knew. It was a matter that was rarely discussed, not because they thought it was shameful, but because it was as unknowable as it was unimportant. Sometimes, when she had been in bed under the covers, she heard the men drinking with Sally out in the living room, joking about who Angela looked like. There was never agreement. Someone would throw out a name and everyone would laugh or groan, "No way!" Angela's father was just one of the random tweaker boyfriends, or a friend of a friend who had some money, or some shady drug dealer her mother fucked for some meth. That union of two dysfunctional, unstable psychos had resulted in a pregnancy. The seed that had been planted from that union of degenerates grew and developed in a continual broth of drugs and alcohol. Angela was the mess that resulted. The little girl, born broken. 9. Angela's grandparents vehemently disapproved of their daughter's lifestyle, but after a lifetime of trying everything they could think of to straighten her out, they eventually came to the conclusion that there was nothing they could do about it. Sally always refused any kind of advice or help, usually at the top of her lungs. Angela remembered epic arguments and Sally throwing things at her father. She insisted there was nothing wrong with her and that she had everything under control. She said it was her life and she was living it the way she wanted. Angela knew that Sally was Looney Tunes. Sometimes people were simply stupid, and there was no fixing stupid. Angela loved her mother, yet had been disappointed by her so many times that she had come to love her in an at-arm's-length way. Part of it, snippets of rare smiles and hugs, most of it, fantasies of what it would be like to have a real mother. On the other hand, she adored her grandparents. She loved nothing more than being with them. They were stability and safety and the comfort of unwavering love. She was often afraid of the men who always seemed to be hanging around their trailer. Angela hated to have to be in the house when her mother was out of it or unconscious or getting laid, and there were men about. Her grandparents were her refuge from that ever-present, shadowy threat. When she had just grown into her teens, one of those men, Frankie, her mother's more or less regular drug dealer and boyfriend, began to lose interest in having sex with Sally in exchange for drugs. Drugs and alcohol had taken their toll on Sally's once good looks. His fixation began to turn to Angela. That first time it happened was as terrifying as everything Angela had imagined it would be. She lived in fear of those men, always worried what they might do to her. She found out one night when Frankie came into her bedroom after her mother passed out. Much like her mother, Frankie was skin and bones. The teeth he wasn't missing were yellow and rotting. High on meth, he grinned like death itself as he pulled her clothes off. He warned her what would happen if she didn't keep quiet. Angela knew Frankie well enough to know he did not make idle threats. He groped her a bit and then stripped down to his bony self. It was like being raped by death without his black robes. He held a knife up to her face as he was forcing himself into her. After he finished, he leaned in close and whispered that if she told anyone, anyone at all, he'd skin both her and her mother alive. Angela believed him. While Angela was never close to her mother, she couldn't understand why Sally seemed to care so little about her, or herself for that matter. Even so, Angela didn't want her hurt, and she certainly didn't want her to be murdered. She was terrified of being cut by Frankie. She knew what he was capable of. After all, he'd just raped her. Rather than leave after he was finished, he sat on the edge of the bed for a while, stroking her hair, whispering to himself how hot she was. Before long, he got it up and was on her again. She pleaded for him to stop. Frankie told her to shut the fuck up or he'd cut her throat. She cried as quietly as she could through the ordeal. She bit the inside of her cheek to distract herself when he was hurting her. She wasn't sure exactly how long he had her in her back bedroom of the trailer, but she knew it had lasted hours. When it was finally over, she lay quietly, listening until she heard the screen door bang shut. Frankie had finally left. There was no one else in the trailer but her mother. Angela lay in bed, shaking until she worked up the courage to go into her mother's room. Sally lay sprawled on her rumpled bed, dirty clothes thrown everywhere, only barely conscious. Angela shook her mother's arm to wake her. Sally mumbled incoherently. Angela knew that Frankie had given her mother extra drugs to make sure she didn't interrupt him. Despite Frankie's warning that if she said anything to anyone, he'd cut her, Angela's outrage at what he'd done to her was stronger than her fear. He'd already hurt her. She was already bleeding. She shook her mother harder, crying as she told her that Frankie had raped her. Her mother's answer was to mumble something dismissive before slipping back into unconsciousness. Angela's tears stopped as she grew angry with herself for thinking that her mother would care what happened to her, much less do anything about it. What was her mother going to do? What could she do? Angela knew the answer. Nothing. She went out into the living room and called her grandparents, the tears returning, and asked if they could pick her up and she could stay at their house even though it was a school night. They knew by her voice that something was wrong. When they arrived, it felt like she was being lifted out from the depths of hell. In the car, even as ashamed as she was to say it out loud, Angela told them that Frankie had raped her. Her grandfather drove them to the cabin and told Gabriella to take care of Angela, that he had an errand to run. As horrified as she was, as distraught and physically damaged as she was, it was the most wonderful feeling in the world to be safe at the cabin with her grandmother. Gabriella cleaned her up, nursed her, had her shower, and gently asked questions. She gave Angela a tea that made her sleepy. Then she took Angela to their bedroom, to their bed, and tucked her in. Gabriella slept with her, holding her all night. Vito had come home sometime during the night and slept on the fold-out bed in the couch in the living room. He slept there for the next few nights, where Angela usually slept when staying at the cabin, while Angela and Gabriella slept in the bed. Angela loved being there with them both, being safe at the cabin. She didn't ask where her grandfather had gone that night or what he had done. She didn't need to. All she needed to know was that her grandparents had rescued her. Sally eventually said something in front of her father about her friend Frankie being missing. She cast a suspicious look at Vito. It was a wordless question. He said that he suspected Frankie had taken a shortcut to hell. Sally didn't know what he meant, but she was afraid of her father, so she didn't ask. Between the assistance checks she got from the state and the sex she provided for drug dealers and their friends, she was soon back into a suitable stupor. Sally was on to other men. Frankie was soon forgotten. Angela never forgot him. Since she was getting to be old enough to do a lot of things to take care of herself on her own, Angela was also gradually drawn into being her mother's servant of sorts. On school nights, when not staying with her grandparents, she did laundry and cooked and was always at her mother's beck and call. Sally would tell her friends, "Go get the girl in the moon. She's in her room. Tell her I need her." Or, "Go tell the girl in the moon to run to the store and get us some cigarettes." Or, "Tell the girl in the moon to make us something to eat." Or, "Tell the girl in the moon to bring us some beers." Angela never knew why her mother called her the girl in the moon. She assumed it was mockery of some sort. Angela knew that Sally was growing increasingly jealous of how her daughter was evolving into womanhood, becoming gracefully leggy and inescapably feminine, while Sally, who had once been a seductive beauty, had become skin and bones. The teeth she had left were horribly discolored and rotten. She had scabs and scars everywhere on her skin and needle tracks up her arms. While Sally was busy partying and getting high all the time, before she knew it, she had lost her looks and her sex appeal. Angela was becoming everything her mother no longer was. 10. Even though Frankie was no longer around, Angela did her best to avoid being at home. She feared that one of the other weirdos would rape her. Some of them were scary guys, and she didn't like the way they increasingly leered at her. She knew what they wanted. They wanted the same thing Frankie had wanted. While a few of the other guys who hung around had been reasonably decent, most, like Sally's new boyfriend, a biker named Bosca, were just plain psychos. Worse, they frequently became violent when they drank. When Bosca was drunk, he sometimes argued with Angela's mother and then ended up beating her. That was always a frightening experience for Angela. After he was finished with Sally, he would storm out. Angela would clean her mother up and put antibiotic and bandages on cuts. Her mother always refused to call the police. She said it was her fault, that Bosca was a good man. Then she would do a line or smoke some meth that he'd left for her. More than once, there were bloody fights between men drinking at their house. Those fights often spilled out into the street in front of their trailer. People would stand around and watch, but rarely try to break it up. Once, it involved knives and one man was stabbed. It wasn't uncommon for the police to be called by neighbors. Angela spent as much time as possible staying with her grandparents. They were everything her mother wasn't. They were protective, reasonable, safe. When she was at home and there were people there partying, Angela went out as much as possible, walking the streets, wandering through stores, or sitting in secluded alleys watching the stars and the winos. Fortunately, her legs were getting long and she could easily outrun them if she had to. Thankfully, sometimes her mother and her friends went out for the night. When they did, Angela did laundry, emptied ashtrays, picked up beer cans, and collected used needles. Sometimes they would be gone for a few days, leaving Angela to wonder if she would ever see her mother again. But she always returned, looking wasted. After Frankie, Angela was thankfully with her grandparents as often as possible. Angela's grandmother said she didn't like Angela in the house when Sally was using drugs. Of course, since her mother was an addict, that was most of the time. Her mother was rarely sober for long. When she was a bitch on wheels, argumentative and combative. Sally didn't especially like Angela staying with her parents. She viewed it as her parents' direct denunciation of her and her way of life. When she was sober enough, she would insist Angela stay home on school nights. Angela knew that it was out of spite. Her grandparents talked about taking guardianship and having Angela live with them permanently. With as often as the police had been to the trailer, and as often as Sally had been arrested and Angela handed over to her grandparents until she sobered up or bonded out, Sally was certainly on shaky ground with Child Protective Services. Angela was excited about the idea of living with her grandparents permanently. Being with them made her fears evaporate. She dearly loved Gabriella, and she idolized Vito. After he was dressed in the morning, but still in his stocking feet, he would let her come with him into the bathroom to watch him shave. It fascinated her, the way he went about it, the way he spread on lather, the careful, measured way he stroked his jaw with the razor, the way he followed the same pattern every time. Sometimes he would tell her funny stories about his job from before he'd retired. When he was done shaving, he would splash on a little aftershave. Angela loved the way it smelled. It smelled like Grandpa and no one else. She would then follow him into the bedroom and watch while he put on the big, heavy work boots with lugged soles that he always wore. She loved those boots because they were part of who he was. They were the boots of someone who was strong and trustworthy. Sometimes she would race into the bedroom ahead of him, slip her feet, shoes and all, into those big work boots and clomp around the room, putting on a show, imitating him, making him laugh. He would sometimes tickle her to get them back, telling her never to grow up. Angela couldn't imagine why her mother